everybody. Welcome to the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode, and today we're going to be catching up on some previous titles that were just released, and we have a whole slew of titles that are coming later this year that we have previews of that we're going to check out. So as usual, on Valiant Sunday, I'm joined by Jesse. Jesse, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to be here, big guy.
Yeah, let's get an overall feel, first of all, for what you're kind of feeling and your expectations for Valiant in the near future with these five titles, I guess, that we're going to preview that are coming out over the next couple months. You feeling good? Apprehensive? Like, what's your overall thoughts?
I'm feeling three emotions. One of them is very good. One of them is apprehensive, and one of them is mixed. And I think we'll discuss some of that because there's some great stuff coming and then there's some kind of meh stuff coming.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. It's like, you know, compared to, I would say, the kind of the bottom of the trough or when things look the darkest, the bleakest with Harbinger Wars 2, which was just a train wreck, of, as we've talked about many times. I'm feeling optimistic, but at the same time, there are a few of these things that, and I'm not saying they're bad comics, but they're just not living up to their potential. And if anything, Valiant, when it first relaunched, was not only full of potential, but they also were living up to that potential with some incredible work done in the three main titles, what I would consider the three main titles, in Harbinger from Joshua Dysart, in Bloodshot from Dwayne Szczerzinski, and obviously Exo Manowar from Robert Venditti. All of those were firing on all cylinders. And, you know, even as other titles started to come out, Unity, Ninjak and such, everything just felt great. It was a long time before they had something that didn't live up to its potential. Because don't get me wrong, everything wasn't all, you know, sunshine and rainbows. There were some things that weren't great. You know, Dead Drop, for example, didn't exactly bowl me over. So they had their misses too, or things that weren't quite as good as they could have been. But there were some, I mean, for me, the Bloodshot, the Exo, and the Harbinger really bought Valiant a lot of credibility. And then with second wave things like Rye, you know, with the painted by Clayton Crane, it was just incredible, you know. And now it's more like they're kind of down with the rest of the publishers. Some stuff's good, some stuff's bad, but really more than anything, what stands out is missed opportunities, you know? And if anything, that's what Harbinger War 2 really showed, that they're not the kind of the all-stars in terms of quality that they used to be. So would you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, I read it the other day. It said that I was on the Valiant Fans Forum. A guy said, does it feel like there's a lack of continuity, or does it feel like the universe is kind of disjointed right now? And I kind of threw it in there. No, it's all together. It's tied together, but it's not entirely tied together. And I'm not being fully honest. You know, and we'll get to that here in a minute, but I mean, we've got things that are going on. Like for example, when we talk about Incursion, well, Incursion is kind of a dead side meets Earth kind of space event. Well, there's characters that are associated very strongly with the dead side throughout the past couple of years of Valiant Publishing that are nowhere seen. And then in their own standalone titles on the side, there's no discussion about that, you know. And it seems like a missed opportunity. Like right now, we're getting ready to launch, you know, for example, a punk Mambo title. And wouldn't it be great if there was a little bit of tie into the Incursion, you know, at the same time, and it was all blended together, and you know, it was kind of this cohesive thing. And, you know, like in the past where we had Harbinger Wars, you had a tie-in from Harbinger. You had a tie-in from Bloodshot. You had a tie-in from, with the Harbinger Wars title itself. So there was a connection there. I feel like we've got a lot of standalone titles right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I also have heard from the Valiant editorial that they're trying to change that as the year goes on, so we'll see if they're successful. But some of these titles, you know, they seem like they could tie in, but we're not, at least from the previews that we've seen, we're not seeing a great deal of overlap. And I understand it takes a lot more effort just to have everything tie in. But Yeah, especially with incursion. And yeah, like Jesse said, we'll talk about that in a little bit. It seems like, again, some lost opportunities there, some things that maybe don't make sense. They should be tying in a little more. So let's dive into the books. The first one we're going to talk about, Life and Death of Toyo Harada, number 2, written by Josh Dysart. Art is by Kafu and Butch Geis. We have colors by Andrew Dollhouse, letters by Dave Sharp. This one came out last Wednesday, so April 10th. So, you know, full disclosure, we're going full spoilers here. We're not going to hold anything back. So if you haven't read it, you may want to skip ahead. We're going to talk about this one and Livewire number 5, which already came out. So, you know, we'll get a little spoilery. We're not going to, you know, give away the shop here, but we will talk a little bit more in detail. So forewarned is forearmed, as it were. What were your thoughts on this issue, Jesse?
This was, I think, better than the first issue. I really thought it was brilliantly told. Dysart's writing, of course, is incredible, but you know, the flashback sequences and as how they, I really believe that the flashback sequences in this issue particularly, are just brilliant foreshadowing of the realities of this book, in the present. You know, and we can go into it a little bit, but I mean, really, you know, you're talking about Harada's early growth, when he's first taking command and whatnot. And something that we don't ever really see in comic books too often. I mean, when you're looking at the Justice League with Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, and when you're looking at the X-Men and the Avengers and whatnot, you know, they're all kind of fighting together and it's great. But we forget sometimes that there could be a character that is so powerful and so invulnerable in many ways that they see reality differently. They perceive threats differently. They perceive the world around them differently than those that are with them. And so what you find in this book, which is brilliant, absolutely brilliant, is that Harada doesn't really fear things that normal people fear because he doesn't need to fear them. And so as he's, you know, steering into a storm, or as he's trying to bend the world to his, you know, his vision, he's got all these guys with him that are trying to, you know, trying to follow along and trying to survive and trying to, you know, help usher in this new era. But they have real concerns. I mean, they, you know, they can die, they can drown, they can be ripped apart, they can fail. And Harada really is the puppet master of this whole thing. And you know, he's like marching into battle and people are dying around him, you know, not literally, but I mean, yeah, almost literally. It's incredible watching how they, you know, this has been something that has plagued him throughout his entire life, that he has, you know, his own evolution, his own journey. But much like a butterfly effect, everything that he does has major consequences that ripple throughout the world around him and those that, you know, care about him and support him as well. My thoughts, I thought it was brilliant. I thought it looks great. It reads great. There's no errors in this. The urgency is there. The emotion is there. The history is there. It's almost, if I was writing, and I didn't write a review on this one for any websites this time, but I would have given it a 10 of 10.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's such so obvious in this issue that it's such an extension of Imperium, and it's continuing the story of Toyo Harada that, you know, kind of started in Harbinger, although he was sort of splitting the spotlight at that time with the Renegades, but clearly was the star of Imperium. Well, I should even go before then. He was the star of Harbinger Omega, that 3-issue limited, and then clearly the star of Imperium, and now to this, Life and Death of Toyo Harada, obviously is a continuation of that story. But it's funny because as I'm reading this, and Harada is so clearly the focus here, and he's such a complex character. We've talked about it many times. So deserving of his own title and spotlight. But it made me remember back to those times we used to have those debates on who was the star, who was the main character, who was the protagonist of the Harbinger title, because you know, it was so much a story of the Renegades. But I think that shifted as the title went on. So I agree with you. This is absolutely brilliant. What I was really struck by is, early on in the book, we get a scene with Ingrid and Toyo where they're starting to acknowledge that maybe this foundational idea of no more wars, you know, no more people starving, no more disease, famine, all that kind of stuff. They're starting to come with terms that there's no way out. They've backed themselves into a corner, and they're not going to be successful in building a world that's a utopia. that gets rid of all these ideas. It's almost like Toyo's coming to the realization that humanity is too chaotic, maybe, to control. You know, what's the phrase, like, life will find a way, right? And for whatever reason, we as humans, we've always had these issues in our world, right? Famine, disease, war, poverty. And it's like Toyo is coming to realize that there's no way out. There's no way to solve these problems. And that led me to the next logical conclusion, which was thinking, well, if Toyo believes that, then wouldn't the answer be to exterminate all life on Earth in terms of human life, except for a very select few, and then kind of start over? Like, you know, you're pushing the reset button and you're starting, and you're starting with a much greater level of technology and knowledge, so that you can kind of have humanity and society grow. You can control the growth. You can control the way it grows and the direction it takes. That, in my mind, would be the only way to create this utopia. And so will Harada take that step? I don't know. Currently, it seems like he just has this clinging to this last hope of this space elevator working, and somehow that kind of jump-starting his plans to where he won't have to take that extreme step. So there's a lot of what ifs still here, which is great from Joshua Dysart. There's still so much for us to discover. The other thing that stuck with me in terms of this narrative, well, a couple things actually. The alien supposed ally of Harada, Angela, and her machinations, and how she reminds me nothing so much as a little kid saying, "If you don't give me my way, I'm going to take my ball and go home." Really quite annoying and dislikable. But I think that is intentional from Joshua Dysart. She's not a likable character. And it's not, it doesn't, you know, it's not bad characterization. She's not, you know, unlikable to the detriment of the story. Again, I think it fits in well. But it's also Josh showing us that, you know, she doesn't have the same values, the same morality, the same even thought process as we humans do, right? She's an alien life form, and she sees things differently. You know, in terms of emotions, you know, I don't know that she has hope. I don't know if that's something she can really experience. I don't even, it doesn't even really seem like she's angry. It just seems like, you know, she's looking at it in terms of, this is what I want, and I'll do whatever I have to get it. But yeah, like, I just I never really cared for her as a character, because again, I didn't think that she was supposed to be likable, but I never had as much active dislike as I have for her until this issue, where I'm just like, man. And you kind of think, uh-oh, she's going behind Harada's back, and that could cause issues. But Harada, and it seems like the wool is being pulled over Harada's eyes a little bit. But then in the end, you see that he's more aware than you may first have been led to believe. And then the last thing I'll mention is the art. So the main story by Kafu is absolutely incredible. I think when we covered the first issue, I think you said something, Jesse, about you really don't want anyone else drawing Toi Harada and kind of his world other than Kafu. And I have to agree with you when seeing this issue. He's so perfectly rendered. Kafu captures Toyo, his allies, his enemies, the level of emotionality, the tension, the drama. Kafu brings all that in his art. It's absolutely incredible. The thing I'll say about the flashback art, it's not as clean by any means as Kafu's art, but it serves its purpose in that it sets a certain tone and mood, like you were talking about, in terms of the things that Harada learned, the lessons that he learned through some tragedies that happened that you know, affected him when he was younger, and not him himself in terms of physically being damaged, but the people around him. You know, like you were saying, coming to the realization that others are fragile and he is not. And it's not that he tempered that by feeling bad that, you know, these other people were hurt, but more that it kind of built up this feeling in him that he was kind of invincible, right? It started him down the path of the hubris that he exhibits now. But what was interesting, when I first got the preview for this issue two, and I saw the flashbacks, I think this is the first time I've ever seen art in black and white that I didn't like more than the color. Like, I like the color version of Butch Geist's flashback pages more than I like the black and white version. Usually I like seeing the black and white version more because you can just see the pencil work and the line work, and it feels more detailed to me. But I think maybe because the art is a little muddy, I liked getting the colored versions because I can kind of distinguish a little bit better. But that might just be my own personal taste or my own bad eyesight. I don't know. But yeah, I thought throughout the artwork is outstanding. You have anything to add about the visuals here?
No, I liked it. Butch Geist has a very gritty style, and that works in a flashback because, you know, a flashback is a memory, and memories are hazy. And also, you got to remember that this flashback sequence is a very kind of violent. There's a lot of movement. There's a lot of chaos in that. And so it lends itself well, Butch Geist's style, to that storytelling. And I will also agree, when I read the black and white preview in advance, it was difficult to separate the characters. It was difficult to separate the background from a ship or from an island or from whatever, because it was so heavy on the ink. And I really do believe, I want to guess it was Dan Brown. Was it Dan Brown? Let me see here. Yeah, Dan Brown. It had to have been Dan Brown that did the colors on these flashback sequences, that really brought it, made it pop, made it come out where you could see better. Because I read it the first time in black and white, then I read it again in color, the same as you. And it really was a much more enjoyable experience. And I have to believe that Butch Geist, who's a very accomplished artist, did it that way for a purpose. I will also say here, and finish up on this a little bit, that I thought it was incredible, because we're talking about the problems that have plagued Harada in Imperium and in this ongoing series now, or I'm sorry, this limited series, where he has to deal with, you know, the political realities, the media optical realities, the ethical realities, historical and you know, dimensional realities. He's got all these things that are, you know, in play, that are preventing him from what would seem like a simple goal, which would be to, you know, end world hunger, to end suffering. You know, he has very altruistic and benevolent ambitions that anybody would. I mean, if you were to watch, you know, CNN, flip it on and hear, you know, some of these junior congressmen talking right now, they might say that too. You know, let's end hunger. Let's get off fossil fuels. Let's unite the world. Let's, you know, but it's much like the storm that we see in these flashbacks. It's not so simple, because if you move a wave, another wave appears. If you change the direction of the wind, you know, then the wind affects something else. And likewise, every action has an opposite reaction, but that's only if there's two actions. You know, there's thousands of possible realities in play, little things in play, nuances in play, opinions and emotions in play. And everything you do leads to a different end and is affected in that way. And so it's not so simple as Harada, like, moving a wave or Harada killing a person to make something better. Maybe by killing somebody, it creates a new dictator, or, you know, or by feeding one people, it creates a situation where another people feel slighted, and then nations rise up against them, or maybe just humanity is doomed. It's really an incredible concept where it shows that Dysart has this mastery of understanding of the human condition of the world we exist in, because it's very easy for a high school kid to say, oh, just end world hunger and we'll all be good. You know, God doesn't exist. We don't need God. You know, it's very easy to say that and sound enlightened, but it takes a little bit of maturity and a little bit of world travel and understanding to know that nothing is that simple. So this, again, 10 out of 10 on this book.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's what makes reading Joshua Dysart's work so engaging, because it is so relevant. All right, let's move on to Livewire number 5, written by Vita Ayala. Art is by Cano. Letters are by Seda Temafonte. This is an interesting story. It's basically the next chapter in Livewire's story, Amanda McKee. We saw in the first four issues her really come to terms with what she did, basically. And if you listen to the the live panel from WonderCon, you heard Vita Ayala talk about that. I did ask her about what Jesse and I spoke about, you know, Amanda's choice, the people that she died, and her carrying that with her. And, you know, Jesse's remark that, well, she should, and Vita acknowledging that and saying that, that it's not going to be a situation where it cripples Livewire, where it prevents her from being a hero and doing the things that she needs to do. But it's always going to be there in the back of her head, this idea that she always has to be in control, because if she loses control, terrible things can happen. So, as I said, this issue 5 really feels like the next, logical step, and Amanda moving past what she did, but still fighting for what she believes in, fighting for the values that she holds dear. Incredible cover from Kenneth. I think it's Kenneth Rocafort. Is that, am I wrong in that? Maybe I'm thinking of the cover for 6. But I think he's.
It might be that. That's, yeah, I'd have to go back because there's too many covers in my mind.
Yeah. But no, yeah, it says right here, main cover, Kenneth Rocafort. Yeah, so he's a favorite. I love Kenneth's art. So we're also introduced to a new organization called the SIOT Safety and Education Program that puts on a face to the world of protecting these young SIOTs from the dangers of the world, and at the same time protecting the world from the powers of these children that they may not be able to control. But it quickly becomes apparent as we get sort of a peek behind the curtain that they're in no way the benevolent organization that they claim to be. And Amanda has her concerns as well. We see Livewire attempting to access their computers to try to understand what exactly they're up to. We see the defenses that they have, which are pretty formidable. And we meet a new character, Phoebe. This is her first appearance, a young SIOT, who apparently is incredibly powerful, and I think that she may be sort of the next generation's Livewire Amanda McKee. There's parallels there that made me wonder that just how important she might be in the future. So I thought this was a really well-done issue. Vita Ayala is once again proving that they are the right person to kind of steer Livewire after the events of Harbinger War 2. And I'm feeling good about it because, as I was saying when we talked about it previously, is the character sort of, you know, tainted or ruined because she's always going to have to carry this around? And the other choice being, oh, you just kind of forget that she killed these thousands of people. And then it feels like that story didn't matter. And it's diminished, and you know we're told that everything that happens in the Valley universe is supposed to count, and they don't roll things back. And so, you know, there was some worry on my mind about that. And I think Vita, as I said, is the right person to be steering this ship because they're doing an incredible job of making sure that we all remember what Amanda did. Amanda herself remembers the choice that she made. It's referenced here and there. But it's, as I said, not crippling her, not preventing her from continuing to try to be a hero and to make a difference. So the art by Cano, I thought, was done really well. You know, normally I feel like I only want Raul Allen and Patricia Martin to be working on Livewire because they just have it down right from the Secret Weapon limited series. But I feel like Cano's art here, it's reminiscent of their art. It's similar enough that I don't think it's jarring in any way. And, you know, Cano's a good artist in his own right. The storytelling, the action is all handled really, really well. So I very much enjoyed this issue. Not as much as issue 4, which I thought was the high point of the series so far, when we really see Amanda come to terms with what she did, accept it, make a decision that she has to move on. For me, that's been the best issue of the series so far. But this was still a great issue in my mind. What do you think, Jesse?
I think that Cano was the right guy to get for this one, mainly because if we were to do something like get like Renato or Clayton Crane to do this issue, it would be massively jarring. You'd go from one issue, which, you know, with Patricia Martin and Raul Allen, and it would just completely screw up the experience. So I believe Cano, because he is very similar to Raul Allen in that regard, was a good choice. I kind of feel like, and this is kind of neat, LiveWire has a strong leadership and or maternal instinct. She wants to take care of people. She wants to educate and train, probably because she was raised in that environment. I mean, she was, from a very young age, brought up by Toyo Harada. And whether she agrees or disagrees with how he operates, there's many, many lessons that I guarantee she would take from him, because Toyo Harada is not 100% bad. He's actually very, very organized and very legit. And you can learn a lot from a guy like that, if you, even if you have differing ethical opinions in the end. And I think she does have differing ethical opinions. And so it looks in many respects like Vita's intention for this may ultimately be where we have another team book again, where LiveWire becomes that Professor X, you know, where she is, she has her own folks. She has her own, LiveWire mansion, and her LiveWire team. And not to be so quirky or corny like that, but I could see that. I could absolutely see, Harada having his Harbinger Foundation over here. I could see LiveWire having her team over here. Pete and the Renegades doing their thing over here. And it would almost be like, in Marvel, you have the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, and the X-Men. I mean, you have different teams with different ideologies. Sometimes they come in conflict with one another. And moving forward, I could see that, because I'll be honest, LiveWire does not necessarily, as far as I can tell, see eye to eye with Pete Stanchek. You know, the way he's operated is very chaotic and very, very non-directional. But she clearly can't side with the Harada vision either, because she sees a lot of the stuff he's done as monstrous and evil. It's not just Democrat versus Republican here. There's independence in this game. And I can see LiveWire emerging in that as that third party option.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And it goes to show, just one last thing I'll mention about this issue and the Valiant Universe overall. They've talked about it being the world outside your window, and it's never as easy as picking one side or the other. There's so many grays in real life, so many different opinions and perspectives. And so it's cool to think of LiveWire bringing another perspective. And I'm not even sure who I agree with. I love Pete. I understand why he does what he does. But at the same time, I think it's this issue, or maybe the previous one, where LiveWire says something about, Stanchek's just out there activating people willy-nilly, without a plan. That's not really the right way to be doing things. So she may have a point. It's a topic probably for another day, though. All right, let's move on to the next book. Now we're going to get into the previews of upcoming titles. We're going to go in order of release, starting with Incursion number 3, which comes out April 17th. It's from writers Alex Packnadel and Andy Diggle. We have the script by Packnadel, art by Doug Braithwaite, colors by Diego Rodriguez, and letters by Marshall Dillon. And again, because these books aren't out yet, we're going to go just more into kind of our thoughts and feelings about the story in terms of the direction it's heading, and we'll be a lot more vague because we really want you to pick it up and read it for yourself, and we don't want to spoil. So I think it's your turn to go first, Jesse. What were your thoughts on Incursion number 3?
Well, as always, it looks great. There's no question about Braithwaite's work. I've never seen him do anything that I didn't like. It's action-packed. You're definitely not disappointed if you're looking for action and good fights. If you like watching Gilad bust out the axe and go to town, you're going to get that. It's bloody. It's got vivid colors. It's a good visual experience. It's not written poorly. I feel like I've been enjoying the Incursion. But I wouldn't give it a 10. Because when you compare it to something like The Life and Death of Toyo Harada at the same time, which is almost flawless, it feels just a little bit less. And also, I am a little scratching my head here somewhat. You have a situation where this is a huge global threat. You've got an alien race or invasion coming in from that has just wiped planets clean. So in many respects, this is about as big as an event as the Valiant Universe has ever seen. And, on par with what you might have seen in Book of Death, but even to a greater degree, because that was the fear of what might come. This is actually, that same fear manifested in reality. you know, it seems like there's more energy being put towards stopping Toyo Harada over in Africa, you know, who's actually trying to benefit humanity than this, you know, demonic alien race that's coming in here and is about to milk the planet of all life. I kind of feel like maybe we'd see a lot more, more than Gilad swinging an axe. We'd probably see, the heroes of this world and the armies of this world all converging at the same time to, in unity to defend against this threat. So it feels odd to me, and I'm scratching my head in that I don't understand. I don't understand entirely why this is like a one or two man fight. Although we do see, snippets of other heroes doing the fighting in the streets against, this, but it seems like just this is such a massive threat that this story, it doesn't make sense to me yet. I don't understand why Gates not there, why the heroes, just almost the entire Valiant universe should be ready to defend against this, because this is a real big deal, unless they don't care about Earth and they're just going to move to another planet.
Yeah, you're echoing the thoughts that I had. So, because it's interesting, we've had two issues of this, and now, here's issue three, and it's the first time I've really felt a lot of what you're talking about. Like, well, wait a second, it's not really making that much sense. And then, at the end, we get the cliffhanger on the last page saying, to be concluded, right? And then it just feels like the story, it's just feels incongruous, right? It's like, in a way, it was a huge idea and a big deal. And this is just look at the name, Incursion, right? It's an invasion of our entire planet. Everybody is threatened. It's a huge danger. But really, it's just its own self-contained four-issue miniseries. Doesn't cross over with anybody. And I have to believe that for whatever reason, I'm sure for editorial reasons, maybe it had to do with creator availability, that things got changed. Things got changed sort of midstream. Like it didn't turn out to be, for whatever reason, timing didn't line up for this to really be a quote unquote event, but they felt it was a good story and work had already been done. So they wanted to go ahead and release it, because I know when I first heard about this, I think it was when I was at New York Comic Con last year, and it was the first time they showed some pages and talked about it, about the fact that it was, an invasion from the through the dead side of this alien, this person, Imperatrix Virago. And, Andy Diggle was there, Alex Pacnadel was there, and they were talking about the story. And I'm 99% sure they talked about Shadow Man being a big part of the story as well. And that changed when we had Alex on to discuss the first issue before it came out. We didn't mention Shadow Man. I specifically was going to ask them about Shadow Man, and they asked me not to. They said, he's not really a part of the story. This is really an Eternal Warrior story. This is really a story of Gilad. And so I get it. Like, things change. But to your point, Jesse, it makes it feel like it doesn't quite fit. Basically we get one page of sort of lip service to the fact that, yeah, here's Archer and Armstrong fighting some of these infected. Here's Exo fighting some of them. Here's Punk Mambo and Shadow Man fighting some of them. And that's all we're going to get for the entirety of the series. And some text telling us, yeah, everybody's being told that these are just rabies infected individuals. And it just doesn't, I don't know. Again, it kind of goes back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the podcast in terms of missed opportunities. Because I think this is a really quality story, actually. I think it's the art by Doug Braithwaite's incredible. I think Alex Pacnadel is showing that he has really good scripting abilities. The story that him and Andy Diggle are telling, it's an interesting enough story. Love the characters of both Scintilla and Virago. I think they're interesting. So there's a lot to like here. But it just feels a little like, okay, round peg, square hole, and it could have been even better. Again, I think they're just leaving some things on the table, and if it's just them deciding, well, we're kind of trying to get away from the line-wide events because we're hearing that people don't want that, I get that. I totally get that. There's a little bit of a feeling of burnout in terms of that. I like I said, I get that. I can understand why people would feel that way, but at the same time, I can't help but feel like it was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, it's a good story. I'm enjoying it. I just don't understand. I feel like that, I've read everything that Valiant's ever produced, right? And for an event this big, with a threat this massive, you would have Exo Manowar flying around with his energy sword. You know, Livewire would come out of hiding. The Renegades would pop up. Hell, Quantum Woody would be clanging. It would be huge. I mean, you saw the entire Valiant lineup unite during the Valiant. You know, and that was just against the immortal enemy. You saw it again during Unity. You saw that again during Book of Death. So it's not like that wouldn't happen. And this is a pretty freaking big threat. I mean, we're talking about the devourer of worlds here. This is like, you know, miniature Galactus. So I'm a little confused here. I kind of feel like this should have been a massive crossover event.
Yeah, and again, I feel like that's what was originally planned, and for whatever reason, they changed directions. And especially when it comes to the fact that this is Deadside, the invasion is coming through the Deadside, and I think Shadow Man was supposed to be a big part of it. And I'm not sure why they announced that at New York Comic Con and then walked back on it. I'm not sure. So again, it's one of those things where I feel like the potential's there. The story's great. The art is great. Like I mentioned, how good the scripting is from Alex Pachnedel, who I wasn't familiar with his work before this. I think Andy Diggle's an incredible idea guy and story teller as well. So there's so much to like here, but at the same time, just a missed opportunity. Instead, we just get this one page here in the beginning of issue 3 that shows, you know, Exo, Archer and Armstrong, Shadow Man, Punk Mambo, and then that's going to be it, right? I mean, that's how it feels, because we're going to be wrapping it up next issue. And even 4 issues for this level of threat feels a little bit rushed as well. So, I don't know, a 6 issue with some tie-ins and some, you know, a couple issue tie-ins from other places. Again, I'm not privy to why they made the change. I'm sure I could ask and they'd probably tell me. I wouldn't be able to necessarily share it with any of you. But yeah, it's a little bit strange is all I'll say. But actually, I'm going to add one more thing, and that's Doug Braithwaite is my quintessential artist for Dr. Mirage. I love the way he draws Dr. Mirage.
Agreed.
All right, let's move on to the next book. It's Punk Mambo number 1, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Adam Gorham, colors by Jose Villarubia, and letters by Dave Sharp. This one's coming out in 2 weeks, April 24th. And we did have Adam Gorham on previously to talk about the title and how much he's looking forward to getting everybody's reaction. He's been working on it for quite a while now. I've never been the biggest fan of Punk Mambo. I felt indifferent. It's not that I dislike her. I've been just kind of indifferent. She's not really my style of character. But I have a feeling that might change after reading this issue. I don't have a lot to add in addition to that. I did enjoy the first issue, but the one thing that I'll say is that I think we're going to get more insight into who Punk Mambo is, and kind of her perspective and her outlook, and maybe even some of her feelings, because she's, you know, this badass punk girl who doesn't even want to acknowledge that she has emotions. But I think this is going to be probably the closest look at Punk Mambo in terms of who she is, where she's come from, and kind of her motivations. And we're going to know her better than we ever have before at any point in her history. And so for that reason, I'm looking forward to discovering more about her, because I did enjoy the first issue, and there were things that happened. There were parts of the story that made me start to like her, or at least be invested in the character. Adam Gorham's art is exceptional. He really shines in the action scenes. It's where his art really comes to life for me. So looking forward to learning more about Punk Mambo, and I'm curious how I'm going to come out the other side of the series in terms of my feelings about Punk Mambo, as opposed to before the series started, when, again, I'm just kind of indifferent. So what were your thoughts on this issue, Jesse?
Oh, I like Adam's art. you know, and I don't dislike Punk Mambo. I enjoyed her as a character with Shadow Man. I enjoyed her as a character with Ninjak. As a standalone character, I don't know. I don't know if she's strong enough to be a standalone character yet. I read the story. I was kind of like, okay, I'm reading a story. And it wasn't, you know, hitting me with any emotion. It wasn't like really making me, I didn't have any like, wow, this is really good moments. I was kind of like, okay, I'm reading a punk mambo story. I can see that it's going to expand on her character, and it's the first time we've really been able to do that. But I kind of felt like I was at a really kind of an average party, and people were like, man, this party's great. And I was like, man, it's okay. I guess it feels kind of average to me. So I read it, and I'll read the next issue, and we'll see where it goes. I hope that at a certain point I say, wow, I got it now. I like this. I do. Right now I kind of feel, meh.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. There's potential here. Will Valiant be able to live up to that potential? I don't know. It's kind of a wait and see thing in my mind. And it may just be that I end up invested because, again, like you said, it's the first time we're exploring Punk Mambo to this extent. And she is, or it feels like Valiant's trying to make her a big part of the universe. So I'm curious and I want to know. But I don't know. It's just the first issue. I always sort of refrain from making, reading too much into, the story based on the first issue. So we'll have to see. Next up, it's Fallen World, issue number 1 of 5, written by Dan Abnett. Incredible art by Adam Pollina. Colors are by Ulysses Areola. Letters by Jeff Powell. Wow. First of all, when I saw Dan Abnett's name on this title, I was like, very excited. I'm a huge fan of Dan Abnett. I think he's maybe the most underrated writer working in comics today. He brings such nuance, such fun ideas. He's great with the scripting. And so I was really excited to see Dan Abnett's name on this title. I also was excited that we were getting back to the world of 4002 AD. So then when I dove in and I started reading the issue, the thing that immediately stands out is Adam Pollina's art and how detailed it is and how awesome. You know, to this point, a lot of the 4001, 4002, the future Valiant stories have been digitally painted by Clayton Crane, and they've been absolutely beautiful. But you don't necessarily get as much storytelling per se because a lot of Clayton's panels are really big, or you get full page spread, so you're not getting as you know, it's just tougher to tell, to fit as much information in because you're not getting a lot of smaller panels. You're getting a lot of big splash pages and such. So it's a little bit of a departure from what we've seen from a lot of the future 4001, 4002 era Valiant stories. But that being said, I love what Adam Pollina is bringing because he's an incredible artist, so detailed. His action scenes are great. His choice of layouts within the panels are awesome. He chooses interesting angles. And I had high expectations, and those expectations were probably even exceeded. I'll also say that in terms of the story, if you didn't read the previous Rise series or the 4001 event, there's a good recap here. It tells you what you need to know. If you don't want to go back and read that, I mean, I suggest that you do because it's an incredible story. But if you, maybe it's not in your budget or whatever, you can pick this up. You can pick this Fallen World miniseries up without needing to go back. Everything you need is here. And then, again, I don't want to tease too much or spoil too much. But the other thing that I'll say is it's an interesting – Rye looks a little differently than he did, which is cool because it's showing that time has passed and character growth. He also doesn't necessarily – his perspective changed a little bit. And there's even a moment, and we talked about this at the panel at WonderCon, where, you know, Ride really doesn't want to fight anymore. He feels like his fight's over. And Bloodshot's like, Eternal Warrior rather, is like, what are you talking about, man? Take this sword, pick up this sword and fight. Like, it's not time to become a pacifist. And so exploring that aspect of the character, his different perspective, and Rye really trying to find a way to lead the survivors of New Japan into the next era and still be their protector. Like, all of that is a really interesting idea to me. So I love all the different, a lot happens in this issue, and I love how Dan Abnett makes it feel like it all fits together. The issue doesn't feel crowded. It moves at a pretty quick pace because there is so much here to explore. But I think of all the books that we're talking about today, maybe with the exception of Life and Death of Toyo Harada, this is my favorite. I would have a hard time choosing between Life and Death and Fallen World. Like, if somebody said, okay, you can only read one of these, I would have a really, really hard time. I'd probably go with Life and Death just because I'm so invested in that story already, you know, with Josh. But Fallen World, man, this issue is spectacular. And as I said, a good recap. You don't have to go back. So in that way, it's a perfect example of the way to do a number one issue to make it compelling and have a lot there for returning readers, but also making it new reader friendly. And of course, I say that I feel like it's new reader friendly, but I'm not a new reader. So maybe it's not as new reader friendly as I'm thinking it is, but it was a good recap. I mean, it's been quite a while since I've read that 4001 AD stuff. And I felt like everything that you needed to know was there. And I don't know if I mentioned the release date. This comes out on May 1st. So what were your thoughts on this one, Jesse?
Absolutely loved it. You know, there's a lot of potential there to screw it up, and they didn't. They did a great job with it. And they tied in a number of past Valiant plot lines and wrapped it up in a nice bow. And that's just the first issue. Personally, I need The Life and Death of Toyo Harada because, of course, that is, you know, that's a story that started in 1992 for me, and I've got over 30 years almost invested in that nearly. But this is all, this is yeah on almost to that same level. Different, yes, but almost very almost on the same level. This is I don't think I'm going to talk to somebody. I'll make a prediction. We could do an interview in mid-May and start asking fans what they thought about it, and I bet you almost all of them are going to say they loved it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's incredible. I think this is going to get a lot of people talking. And I mentioned Dan Abnett, the writer. If you know, hopefully this is well received, and Valiant can keep him on for a long time. He's never, as I said, he's kind of an underrated writer. And as far as I know, he's never been kind of the architect. You know, sometimes you see these writers that come in, like a Brian Michael Bendis, a Scott Snyder, a Jeff Johns, Jason Aaron, certainly at Marvel, Jonathan Hickman. They come in, they have these big ideas that are really too big to be contained in one series, but they're telling them in one series. But then what happens is, as it goes along, it kind of branches out and ends up in some big event. And I think Dan Abnett is a writer who has the talent to do that. And maybe he's never done it because he doesn't have any desire to do it. But if Valiant could hang on to him for you know, a long time and let him kind of touch all the different characters and really be sort of a guiding force, because I really do think the guy is that talented, and he has that ability. So I guess time will tell. But I definitely would love to see him do more things at Valiant. Probably an Eternal Warrior series for him. I think he would be a great writer for Exo Manowar or Bloodshot as well. We don't know who the next Exo Manowar writer is, as far as I've heard. I'm not remember. I mean, we know Tim Seeley's on Bloodshot, so that would be interesting to see Dan on Exo. I think he'd bring a lot to the character. So, all right, up next we're going to talk a little bit about the Free Comic Book Day special. It's written by Tim Seeley. Well, there's multiple stories in here. We've got a Bloodshot story and we've got a Fallen World story. So Bloodshot stories by Tim Seeley with art by Thomas Giorello and colors by Diego Rodriguez, letters by Dave Sharp. And then the Fallen World prelude is by Dan Abnett, art by Juan Jose Uribe, colors by Andrew Dahlhouse, and letters by Jeff Powell. So this is the first time we're getting to see kind of a preview of what Tim Seeley's Bloodshot is going to be like. It's a huge departure for not only from the Jeff Lemire Bloodshot stories that were being told, but even going back to the Dwayne Straczynski stuff that we just started covering on the Valiant Chronology. And so Tim has gone on record as saying he wants to tell this from a third person perspective, where we really don't necessarily have insight into what Bloodshot's thinking. Rather, we get our insight into what Bloodshot is thinking and kind of his goals and who he is currently in terms of seeing what he does, right? He's a man of action, to borrow a phrase. And so I really feel like it's going to be this big, you know, summer blockbuster popcorn movie kind of feel. And if that's the feeling they want for Bloodshot, that's fine. It doesn't surprise me, being that we have the movie coming up soon, that you want something that's, it doesn't explore these really deep ideas and you feel like you need to go back and start from the beginning, like you may feel if you tried to jump into the Jeff Lemire run midstream. This is going to feel much more comic booky, right? Much more, hey, it's Bloodshot. He's a living weapon. He's fighting the bad guys. And there's lots of guns and action. And I expect that's what it's going to be. There's nothing wrong with that necessarily. But I just wonder, after the Jeff Lemire stuff, if it's going to feel a little, I don't want to say inconsequential, but it's just going to have a little bit of a different feel. But regardless of that, it's going to be better than Bloodshot Rising Spirit, which has been another one of those opportunities missed in my mind and hasn't been very good. At least this is quality comic book storytelling, even if it's not, you know, that character examination that Jeff Lemire did. It's Brett Booth on the art when the regular series kicks off. This is Thomas Giarello, and it does suit kind of, you know, Thomas does a great job at action, and it does suit sort of the narrative, and it's sufficiently moody in tone. But I think Brett Booth and his kinetic action-oriented art is going to look even better and suit Bloodshot even better. So I did enjoy this. I expect when the regular Bloodshot series kicks off, to enjoy it even more. But I do and enjoy it even more in terms of getting the narrative going with little seeds that are planted here, and also seeing Brett Booth's art. But I do have to say the last page of this Free Comic Book Day Bloodshot story, where Bloodshot kind of walks out of fire and is healing as he does so, is a really cool looking. I really got a kick out of that. So I enjoyed it, and I'm curious to see what the new Bloodshot title, how it's gonna feel and play out, and how longtime Bloodshot fans are gonna feel about it. What do you think, Jesse?
Yeah, absolutely. I know we're getting closer to February of 2020 when the Bloodshot movie comes out. If I was Bloodshot, if I was Valiant, I would absolutely be making zero major changes of any level with Bloodshot, because, you know, it's kind of like, let's wait and see how the movie plays out and how the audiences react, what they talk about online, and then we can mold the character appropriately following that. That's what I would do. And I think that's exactly what they're doing. Right now, it's, you know, popcorn, explosions and guns, which is nothing wrong with that. There's certainly a place in entertainment for that. So watching Bloodshot smash motorcycles and kick heads off and shoot guns, I'm down. I like it. It looks good. It looks crisp and sharp. Does it add depth? No, but we've had a couple of years of depth, haven't we? You know, so maybe it's just time to tell a couple popcorn stories where Bloodshot's the killing machine that we know him to be. And then following the movie, once people start, you know, inevitably picking up Bloodshot comics, well, we can explore a new angle, you know, a new depth. I can see that happening. I'm not a huge Juan Jose Ripe fan, but, you know, his hyper detail kills me a lot of times. But to be honest, in terms of artwork and a Free Comic Book Day issue, man, I can't complain. It looks great. stories. It's interesting. It's expansive. So it gives something for new readers to kind of draw them in, but it also gives something to old readers like myself that says, oh, this is going on at the same time as War Mother and 4002 and Rye. Holy crap. You know? So it's interesting. I thought all in all, it wasn't a bad book, not a bad publication for a free comic book day. I'll give it that.
Yeah. It's interesting. The issue one of Fallen World comes out on May 1st, like I mentioned, and then Free Comic Book Day is May 4th this year, just like it was last year, actually. So it's Star Wars Day and Free Comic Book Day all rolled into one. And this Fallen World Prelude story actually takes place before the Fallen World number one issue. So that's, yeah, it's a little bit different. And it had such a different feel than Fallen World number one. After I read Fallen One World first. I got that one first, checked it out, loved it. And then I read this, and I'm like, well, it had such a different feel and tone than Fallen World number one. And then I had to go back and read Fallen World number one to make sure I didn't miss anything. So like Jesse said, it's expansive. It's looking at a completely different aspect of the story. And I have to imagine that some of the events that take place in this Free Comic Book Day Fallen World story are eventually going to make their way into the Fallen World regular title, because it is adding to the story and adding to the world and giving us insight into some of the other peoples that are living on Earth at this time. And the kind of the main character here is another one of those instances where kind of dislikable, you know, sort of through no fault of his own, because, you know, he just doesn't know. It's just a lack of knowledge, you know, knowledge being lost over time. So it'll be nice to see him get his comeuppance from whether that be from the Eternal Warrior or Rai or whoever it might be. But it's not exactly an original idea either, this idea of you know, religion and
control.
Yeah, control, and kind of using, you know, belief as a tool for enslavement, that kind of thing. It's like that story's been told a lot, and so in that way it's a little bit disappointing. But yeah, the art's incredible, and like I said, I really trust Dan Abnett, so we'll see how this gets tied into the regular Fallen World limited series. All right, last book we're going to talk about is Psylords number one, written by Fred Van Lente, art by Renato Guedes, letters by Dave Sharp. This one doesn't come out till June 19th, so it's quite a ways off, but it'll be here before you know it. This was one that it really didn't resonate for me, and I'm a little surprised, because Fred Van Lente, I'm a big fan of. It's an interesting enough idea, certainly quite different than the Psylords we had in the first go round of Valiant. So for me, this is one that's kind of a wait and see. I couldn't get a read on it at all from the first issue on whether or not I'm going to like it or not. I'm just not sure how I feel about it, even having read it a couple times. So I think I just need to see more. And the other thing is, as much as I enjoy Renato Guedes' art, and I think he's perfectly suited for Shadow Man, you know, he did a lot of work on the Andy Diggle Shadow Man series that recently ended. I don't like his art on this particular issue. And it's because when you start talking about science fiction, you start talking about cosmic stuff, space stuff, and this is just a personal preference for me, I prefer really clean art, clean lines. Things should look, you know, futuristic and shiny, and that's not Renato's art, in my opinion. So for me, the art didn't really work either. One thing I did enjoy about the visuals, though, and this is also Renato, because he did the colors, the color work is done exceptionally well, because we get introduced to these four characters, and sort of similar to the different spectrums of the Green Lantern Corps, each of them is sort of defined by a different color. So one is green, one is orange, one is red, one is yellow. And I thought that was handled really well, especially when they manifest their powers. So I guess maybe as we start to learn more about these characters, I may become more invested. I didn't find any of them to be particularly likable. One I actively disliked. So again, I guess it's just sort of a wait and see thing for me. But the other thing I was left wondering is, why is Lex Luthor in a Valiant comic wearing glasses? That was just strange as well. And what I mean by that is one of the characters, the green character, is bald and he has a green suit, which reminded me of Lex's power armor. And yeah, it just, I don't know, didn't work for me. So I guess I'll have to wait a long wait for issue two before I can check it out and see if Fred and Valiant and the rest of the creative team can change my mind. What did you think, Jesse?
Okay, let me go on brief and non-spoilery soapbox mode. I'm very active in online social media discussions about all things Valiant. All right, and when people said, you know, oh, this looks terrible, I jumped in there and was like, hey, give it a chance. Hey, no, give it a chance. Don't be so quick to rush. Who knows? We'll see what happens. And man, I might be wrong. I hope not, but there's, I need to almost talk directly to Valiant here and say, listen, guys, when you're making a number one issue and introducing new characters, number one, you want your characters inside the book to look like they do outside the book. Because when I look at the cover and I see a guy with a beard and a mop top of hair with kind of a hipster haircut, it's confusing when I look inside the book and immediately see a bald, clean shaven guy. It's also confusing when that guy is Russian, but he doesn't talk like a Russian. And that's just one example there. When all your new characters are bald and clean shaven, it's difficult to separate them. Yeah, they have different colors, but then again, that's where we get into the problem with art. Renato's a great artist. Renato should never do a first issue. Renato should never introduce new characters in a first issue. Because he'll do great in like an issue number 7, where you want to try to show something neat and interesting. For an initial issue, part of your thing is to tell a story, but it's also to introduce the world to these characters and make them care. And I really, really want to care, but I don't. And that's a problem. I mean, I've spent over $1,000 on original artwork for this issue alone already. Trust me, Valiant, I am invested as a fan, like a super fan, and yet I still don't care. And that's a problem because I can't understand. I'm looking in there. I like Fred's writing. He's written some of the best stuff I've ever read. I like Renato's art. I like this concept. But this story, this first issue, was terrible with pacing. It needed to be spread out over 3 or 4 issues. There needed to be a slow, eased-in introduction to each of these characters that made me care. That made me say, wow, I really like that character from France. Or, wow, that Russian guy, he really is a tank, you know, but I don't. And right now, I'm going to have to go back and reread this issue 3 or 4 times and convince myself that I care somehow. But if I was your average comic book fan, you're not going to get that luxury. And that's a problem because the goal is to make good books and put them out there to the fans. Now, will this book get great? Maybe. You know, maybe issue 2, 3, and 4 will be so amazing I forget issue 1. Again, doesn't look bad. It just doesn't match what we expect. Doesn't entirely read bad, but it's paced wrong. And I find myself like, okay, here's a character. Okay, oh wait, right, now they're talking. Okay, cool. Now why do I care? Okay, cool. Look, they have powers, but now they already know how to use them. Now they're banding together. Oh, now they're a team. What in the world? You just took 4 or 5 issues and pushed it into 1 issue and called it a product. You got to avoid doing that. It's dangerous because there's a whole bunch of drooling mouth breathers out there that just can't wait to suck this stuff up. I don't see people throwing money at this. It's going to be a problem. So take a round turn on that, please, Valiant. Take a round turn on that. It's you have something there. It can be worked with. It can be used. It can be expanded on. There's a lot that can be done with this, and I have no doubt that you have plans for that. But this is the wrong approach. This is the wrong approach for issue 1.
Yeah, and we should mention that there's still time to make changes. You know, this is a very advanced copy that we got, what they call a working copy. So there still could be some things changed. But yeah, it feels fundamentally like it's one thing to start in the middle of the story. But it's another thing to skip over and kind of mash everything and go at this breakneck pace that that they're operating at. I mean, maybe we'll find out that they were trained to use their powers before. They knew each other before, and so that would make sense for them to kind of fall back into their roles subconsciously. So in my mind, that's about the only way for this really to make sense. But again, I was almost half expecting you to say, just completely disagree with me, Jesse, and say, ah, you got it all wrong. It's great. I loved it. So, but it's nice to know that you're picking up on kind of some of the same things that I'm picking up on. And, you know, we are Valiant fans, you know, Valiant super fans in Jesse's case, and we want them to succeed. But we also have to be objective, and we got to call a spade a spade. And yeah, this wasn't the best of first issues, you know. And like I said, I'm a huge fan of Fred Van Lente. He's been on the show several times. He's a friend. I've hung out with him several times. So I want this to be good, and I want it to succeed. But I can't, in good conscience, say that it's a good issue and then have you guys all pick it up and go, what the hell is Jace talking about? Because it just didn't work for me. And that's the bottom line. Maybe, and it didn't work for Jesse either, but maybe for some of you it will. But yeah, fundamentally, I think the story needs to be changed a little bit, or maybe it's you know, like I said, in issue two, we're going to find out, oh, these guys have been a team for a long time, and here's kind of how it happened. And I don't necessarily expect that. It doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like this is really them having been captured and given these powers, and then, yeah, all of a sudden they break out. They know how to use their powers. They're a team. Yeah, it just doesn't work. You know, fundamentally as a story, I think that there's issues with this. No pun intended.
No, I agree with you, man. It needs to, I'll even drop the hammer down. Editorial needs to pull it. They need to stop it and say, hey, we need to go back to the drawing board on this and you know, maybe release it 2 or 3 months later. Expand upon it. Yeah, if you go back to Exo Manowar in the first few issues, there was a slow build. You know, you started out with Arik, you know, in ancient times, then you had Arik in space, then you had they did a slow build before he even made it to Earth. This was really rushed, and I really want this series to succeed. I want this to be, you know, a great product moving forward for Valiant. I want to be entertained, and right now, no.
Yeah, it's not working. So at least they didn't do the whole Valiant Vision sort of try to make it 3D kind of thing that they did with Psylords. The first Valiant did it with Psylords the first time around. If there's anything that could have made this worse, it would have been something like that. Which, of course, it would never work with Renato as artist. His lines just aren't clean enough to be used for 3D art. It just wouldn't work. So, all right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. I know we covered a lot, bit of a supersized episode, over an hour here. So, glad you all stuck with us. Hope that you're enjoying Valiant's titles. As always, I'll post this episode up on the Valiant fan page on Facebook, also at the Valiant fan forum. So there's plenty of places to give feedback. Obviously, you can always reach out to Jesse and I on Twitter, Instagram, to tell us most of you haven't gotten a chance to read Psylords yet, but there's always ability to reach out to us. Let us know what you thought of Life and Death of Toyo, Livewire number 5, and the upcoming incursion that comes out this week. So as always, we want to thank you all for joining us. I believe next Sunday we'll be returning to the chronology with Bloodshot number 2 from that 2012 series. So looking forward to that. It was really great. I hadn't read the first issue of Bloodshot probably in about 3 or 4 years from that Dwayne Straczynski run. It was great to go back to that. It reminded me how much I loved it when I read it the first time, and was so excited to have Bloodshot back. So look for that next week. As always, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.